Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and once again, we're diving into the world of independent genre filmmaking. This time, it's a, I'm going to say, mythic fable. A new movie from IFC Midnight called Wildling, and its director, Fritz Bohm, is here with us today. Hello, Fritz.
Hi, Summer. Nice to be here.
Now, Wildling is a, I thought it was going to be more of a horror movie, but it turns out it's more of a fable, sort of one of those mythic storytellings that just completely enthralled me. And you're also the co-writer, correct?
That's correct, yeah. I've been developing it over several years, and I think what it ended up being is somewhat of a dark, scary tale that combines horror elements with a coming-of-age story about a young woman named Anna who goes through puberty, except in her case, puberty goes a lot further than with the normal human being. I could say that.
Yes, without giving too many spoilers away, Anna's not like everybody else.
That's right.
And it's one of those tales where the setting is, I'm guessing, the somewhere near the Pacific Northwest or the Northern Territories. It's very ancient feeling, and it feels perfect. The setting feels completely perfect for the world where Anna is a part of.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, the setting was always meant to be a very remote, woodsy area where you have large stretches of forests, old caves full of bones and mythical remnants of the ancient wildling species. And funny enough, we actually shot the movie in New York City, or in a very, very narrow radius around the city. So everything you see in the movie is really involving a lot of tricks to make it feel like the kind of world you're describing.
Well, in that case, the movie magic is stunning in this case, because I never would have guessed you were anywhere near a big city.
Thank you. Well, we had to retouch some skyscrapers and some power lines and stuff like that. But it's funny, if you just go a few miles outside of Manhattan, there's actually beautiful forests there, and there's even several caves right in Manhattan, which, you know, I was always worried that we won't find a cave if we shoot in New York, but we did find enough to, you know, create our version around it.
Tell us a little bit about how this story evolved, because the gist of the story, it is a coming-of-age story of Anna and her, her being imprisoned as a child and finding her way to freedom as a young woman. And it's not your typical werewolf story.
No. I looked at a lot of werewolf films when we got started, and we were certainly inspired by those, but we always knew that that our story was centered around, you know, that strange phase in life called puberty, and it's a transformation story rooted in puberty and that's a biological process. So it didn't make sense for us to use all the typical werewolf tropes, because they all involve magic, or very often do, you know, but puberty is a biological thing. So those two things didn't fit together. So we basically stripped away everything that is magic about werewolves, like silver bullets, magical amulets, or, you know, just the idea that werewolves can transform back and forth from, you know, their werewolf shape and their human shape. Like, we stripped all that away and then realized, oh, we're actually creating something that you can't even call a werewolf. It's something different. So, you know, that's where the idea of the wildling came about. A very predatorial parallel species to mankind that is probably originated somewhere in the far north where it's cold and had other environmental factors influenced its evolution. So, you know, we just basically created our own species there.
Now, the mythic sort of fable quality of the story, I'm guessing that evolved with the building of the script. Was the script fully formed before you guys started casting and shooting?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, I said in the beginning, it formed over a period of several years, maybe 3 or 4 years, that from the very original idea, the very start of the idea, to talking it out with my friends and co-writers. And then once it was clear what it was, writing the script was actually pretty fast. It only took a few weeks to write the whole script. And then on that basis, we started looking for producers, which took about a year until the movie was then also greenlit. And then within that year, we also did the casting. But it was always on basis of the finished script. I think, you know, the script actually never changed that much throughout the process. If one thing still changed, it was mostly because some of the actors had very strong feelings about their characters, or, you know, came in with ideas of their own, how to adjust a moment or how to make a moment a little different or give us a deeper window into the inside of their characters. And for me, that was a blessing, because those changes are really what you hope for as a director. Mm-hmm. You have really motivated cast.
And you've got some very experienced, talented people on this cast. You've got Liv Tyler and Brad Dourif. Mm-hmm. And both of them have extensive experience in sort of fable-like or science fiction fantasy storytelling. You know, Liv Tyler with Lord of the Rings and Brad Dourif with Dune, and the just being able to pick their brains on some of that stuff, I think, would have just been worth the effort.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, totally. No, I feel so lucky that they responded the way they did to the script, that they thought that this was good character material to work with. And you know, we didn't do much rehearsing. It was a very tight schedule, but even in that very tight time frame, they came up with great additions to the script or little alterations about their characters, which was really fun. And I think that, yeah, due to their massive experience, especially with Brad Dourif, I think he's done over 100 films or more. And when he digs himself into a subject matter, then you know, he becomes that character.
Mm-hmm.
Even in between takes, he's just his character's name is Daddy, and he arrived on set as Daddy, and he left the set as Daddy. It was really you know, it was amazing, amazing to work with them.
Cool. Now, your young star, Belle Powley, she plays Anna, and the transformations she undergoes are very impressive. Her acting was just so compelling as she's experiencing this new world, but the way she's working with the effects, the practical effects with her teeth and her skin, those were practical effects, correct?
It was a blend. The original plan was to do it all practical, but we couldn't afford to go all the way practically, you know, simply for time reasons. You know, it can take away so many hours from your day if you have a complex makeup that has to be applied to the actor. And it also, you know, comes with a lot of practical problems, and we couldn't afford to spend that much time and money on the effect during the shoot. So we had to find ways of getting halfway there with practical effects, and then using digital effects later on to track certain elements on top of the practical effect, or to blend them with digital elements. So, you know, at some point in the movie, almost every shot of Anna is somehow manipulated in post-production. You know, there was no other way to pull it off. I wish I could have done it all practically, but my whole background is in post-production and effects, so I knew what I could do when I went in. So I knew it was basically just going to be a question of time in post-production. And luckily, my producers gave me enough time to do it in post.
Great. So for you, what was the most, I guess, rewarding part of getting this film made? Because it's wonderful to look at, and the atmosphere is impressive. And I can't wait to have other people see this.
Thank you. I mean, you know, really the most rewarding experience was working with my cast. It just felt like we got really lucky with Belle, Brad, Liv, Colin, who plays Ray, who plays Liv's younger brother. And, you know, throughout the cast, I felt like I really got the people who were right for the part and who were able to embrace their roles and identify with their characters. And so, you know, my job on set was basically to try to let their instinct come to the surface. So, you know, to create an atmosphere where I could provoke the most natural, authentic performance with each of them. And, you know, especially with Belle, it was really fantastic because she's such a talented actress, and she has such strong instincts. So that was a lot of fun to go through that process with her.
Awesome. Well, Fritz, thank you so much for sharing your insights and experiences with this film.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And the movie is Wildling. It's coming out from IFC Films. Will be available in theaters and on digital April 13th. And we will have links to where you can find it. And with that, we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. come out from back there. Your chauffeur wants to talk to you, wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa, the first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award, with weekly stories from the world's best authors, Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more, with news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pole, Wolf, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
Hi, this is Amber Mintender from FX's Legion, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And if you want to hear more about Wildling, you can check out the links from the show notes as well as my review of the movie. It really is a very atmospheric, very dreamy tale, and it is a new take on the werewolf legend. And I think people who are looking for a little something different in their werewolf fiction these days might really get a kick out of how different this particular film is. So, like I said, check out the review. When it is released on April 13th, you can check it out yourself. It'll be available on video on demand, on digital, and in select theaters in New York and Los Angeles. So keep an eye out for that from IFC Midnight. In other news, the new season of Siren has started, which is a new show on Freeform that examines an entirely different take on the mermaid legend and mythology. Very, very different. Very enjoyable. There's a mystery in there, a little military conspiracy sort of thing going on there, and what looks like could end up being a three-way romantic entanglement. And I know a lot of people who are falling in love with Siren so quickly are looking forward to seeing how that particular threesome almost literally turns out. The first two episodes aired last week. The third episode aired this week. You can catch them. Since it's a Freeform show, you should be able to catch up on Hulu, no problem. I recommend it. The storytelling is maybe a little too fast-paced, but the intrigue in how slowly they're developing the background of the mermaids is curious and interesting, and I like it so far because the mystery keeps you engaged. You have several different factions of this town who are, I don't want to spoil it too much, but yeah, there's a whole lot of people with their own agendas, and they're getting in each other's way, and I'm surprised they haven't killed each other before now, but I don't know, that's how small town politics works. Small town socializing? I don't know, but it's fun to watch. And the mermaids are definitely not your grandma's mermaids. This is definitely not Ariel from Disney's Little Mermaid. These are some strong and vicious creatures when threatened. That's all you need to know going in, and it's only going to get more fun from here on out. The other show that started up finished. Magicians just ended. Black Lightning is coming up on its season finale, and thankfully that's been renewed for a season two already. Yeehaw. The Expanse is coming up. Legion just started, but I don't have time to watch Legion. So if anyone out there is watching Legion and wants to do a 5 episodes in review or recap, let me know. Email address is summer@sliceofscifi.com, and we'll get some Legion news on there. Last year I interviewed Amber Midthunder. Maybe we'll get her back on the show again in the future. We'll see how that works out. The other spring summer show that I'm really looking forward to is Cloak and Dagger, which is, of course, based off of Marvel's Cloak and Dagger, a couple of mutants whose mythology and background could be viewed as problematic these days. I'm looking forward to seeing how they maybe clean that up a little bit, restructure that a little bit going forward. We'll see. But the trailers so far look good. I mean, this alongside Runaways could really rejuvenate Marvel's mutants for a decade to come, I hope. Because mixed bag on the X-Men I grew up with, but if they've done The Gifted beautifully. They're doing The Runaways darn good. Cloak and Dagger also looks good. Reserving judgment on Dark Phoenix and New Mutants, even though the rumors of numerous reshoots coming down the pike are disconcerting. Yeah, I'm going to use that word. I'm going to be generous, giving them a benefit of the doubt while acknowledging problems in probably the storytelling and the execution. We'll see how that goes. I'm a big fan of the New Mutants comic books. If they mess up the New Mutants movie, I will be sorely put out. Yeah, that's how I'm going to phrase it for now. But what other shows are you guys looking forward to? Let us know. The number to call in is 602-635-6976. Also, you can send me an email. Again, summer@sliceofscifi.com. Ask a question, send in a comment, and we will do our best to answer. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, and Krypton Radio. And if you're listening through iTunes or Stitcher, please leave a review. Leave a review for the show. Let other people know what you're enjoying about the show, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can also follow us on Twitter @SliceOfSciFi. You can follow us on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there as well. And of course, there are the websites, sliceofscifi.com, where you can comment on a lot of the stuff that we see, we read, we watch, we consume about science fiction, horror, paranormal, fantasy, and other fantastical, speculative genres of entertainment. If you want to shove that over into books, you can go over to writersafterdark.com, and everything else is caught over on popculturegeeks.com. I want to thank everyone for supporting the show through their pledges and donations through PayPal and Patreon. If you want to help support the show, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you just want to make a one-time donation, come to the website, look at the show notes. There is a paypal.me link. A dollar helps. Seriously, every dollar that is pledged every month goes to supporting, keeping the sites online, and that helps me a great deal. You have no idea how much that helps me a great deal. So I thank everyone for your continued support. And if you can do a little bit more, it would help. It would help a great deal because we are painfully self-sufficient. There's a lot of money coming out of my own pocket to keep a lot of this going. And the number of fees involved in hosting a website, hosting the media, producing the show, I'll just say it. GoDaddy raised their prices for domains again. Yeah. And so any help is greatly appreciated. I'd also like to send a shout out to my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for their musical contribution to Slice of Sci-Fi. I love the theme music, and a lot of other people have too. So thank them by going to their website, sci-fried.com, and supporting what they do as well. They are a working band out of Orlando. They have concerts, events in the Orlando area. They frequently travel to perform at conventions. All that information, again, is found at their website, sci-fried.com. And that will do it for this episode. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.